Welcome back to Vulcan Hello, the Incomparables podcast dedicated to new Star Trek. I am one of your hosts, Scott McNulty. I am joined, as always, by Jason Snell. Jason, how are you?
Hi, Scott. We made it to the end. We made it to the end of season one of Star Trek Picard.
I know. I'm sad because that means next week, two things won't happen. I won't watch a new episode of Star Trek Picard, and I won't talk to you about it because the episode doesn't exist.
That's true. Although, we have something very special planned. Mm-hmm. We are doing, so The Incomparable is going to do an episode about Star Trek Picard this season. And so many people wanted to be on it that we split into two groups.
So The Incomparable,
well, you were sent on a special mission, Scott, special mission. We're going to do an Incomparable episode about it, and there's going to be a special Vulcan Hello episode about it, and that will be what you do next Thursday nights at our usual time.
It'll be exciting to talk to some other people
who are not me about Star Trek, because I'm done with you.
Yes.
I'm sick of you. Come on, get out of here.
I know. It's been
10 quite... weeks of hell. No, it's I will miss our Thursday chats, but there's more in store is what I'm saying. We'll just say that up front, that
yes,
there will be a special season wrap-up panel episode here in the Vulcan Hello feed, so you should check that out. And also, you should check out New Mexico Tea Company, because they sponsored all 10 episodes.
Thank you, New Mexico Tea Company.
Yeah, nmtco.com or teearlgrayhot.com. Love saying that. 15% off your tea order and free shipping. And if you order Earl Grey tea, that's 25% off when you use the code TEARLGREYHOT. And there is a momentous moment late in this episode where the drinking of tea is important. I'm just going to say that. We'll get back to it later. There's important. What's the first thing you do when you're brought back from the dead? You drink some tea and make sure it tastes okay. That's what I'm going with. But we'll get there. We'll get there.
You got to check to make sure these things are working.
Yeah, imagine like we brought you back to life, but the tea doesn't taste right. You'd be like, kill me.
That's right. This is not worth
living. Life's not worth living if the Earl Grey tea doesn't taste acceptable by an android.
And the New Mexico Tea Company's Earl Grey tea always tastes acceptable.
I had it today. I had some today and it was lovely.
See, that's
it's caffeine
even better
is
than acceptable.
Pumping through my veins right now as we record this.
Coursing through your veins.
It is.
So let's talk enough of your veins.
Yeah, let's get to
Jason.
It. The caffeine says let's get to it, Scott.
Yes, let's do it. Episode 10 of Star Trek Picard, second part of Et in Arcadia Ego.
Right. Let me translate that for you. It means part two of last week's episode.
That is correct. And the final episode of Star Trek Picard of this season, there will be, worry not, fellow nerds, there will be a season two, although who knows when that will be put into production.
Who knows when or how, but they're writing it, apparently, from their own little homes. They're writing it even as we speak.
That gives me hope for the human race.
Yes.
But this episode opens not with a flashback.
No.
But with a water-sodden Borg cube.
Yeah, they landed this Borg cube in the lake, or they stirred up some like aquifer underneath this or whatever, but they're like it's a wet cube.
And this wet cube maybe water shrinks Borg cubes, because it seems very small in there. Everybody just seems to run into each other.
Well, I mean,
very easily.
The stuff that's below the water table, they had to get out of, right?
I guess that's true.
But you're right. Even in the last episode, they sort of just walk into the crack and there's people there. But maybe that's the whole idea, is that that's where you can get in from the ground. And so that's where they are.
So
that's the place they can stand.
The
but you're right. It's like one of those toys where you put it in water and it expands. It's the reverse with the Borg.
It's the reverse.
It turns out.
Exactly. It's advanced
down.
Borg technology.
They are so talented.
So we knew last week that Narek had a plan, right? That's his name, Narek, right?
Narek, yeah. And we knew he had a plan because for some reason the evil synth girl sent him, like freed him, and she seems to use him because they want that violence to be proof. But he is off to do something too. Maybe doing her bidding so much as he was a useful foil for her.
That's right. So he's making his way to the Borg cube. We see him enter the Borg cube, and then we get a nice little scene between Seven of Nine, our old buddy Seven of Nine, and Elnor.
Hey.
I like Elnor as a character. He doesn't get a whole lot to do in the 10 episodes of Star Trek Picard.
No, he's the muscle when he needs to be, but he's not like We don't spend as much time with him, and he's a very simple character, so we don't really know a lot about him. There's not a lot to know, I think, for now.
I think he's all surface at the moment. So it's Elnor is, oh, you, what you see is what you get. But he opines to Seven of Nine. He's not, he doesn't have social graces. So he says to Seven of Nine, hey, Seven of Nine, don't you think these ex-Borgs are better off dead? But you don't read the room, Elnor.
Yeah.
She does not, surprisingly, agree with that. And that was a nice little scene.
Yeah, I agree. And Elnor is lurking, or Elnor is there, and then Narek is lurking in the background, because I guess he knows a way that, around that, that Borg cube.
And here's the most stupefying, unexpected plot twist ever. What's her face? The evil Swister is not dead, and she's there.
Yeah, she didn't go with the fleet, but instead went on the Borg cube, was stowed away on the Borg cube, I guess.
I guess. I don't know. Hiding somewhere.
Yeah.
Who knows?
She's really frustrating this... to the last, this character. Narissa.
Narissa, yes. So she and Narek, she's like, hey, Narek, did you find where the synths are? And he says, yes, I found them all. And she says, good. Let's go
kill them
get
all.
Some... Let's kill them all, basically.
Yeah.
That's their plan.
I was reading an interview with Michael Chabon, the showrunner of this season, and they asked about Narissa and what her deal was, and he basically said, well, we had a whole backstory for her and her history and her relationship with Narek and all of that, and then, you know, when it came time, it seemed to not be as important, so we cut it all out. And I thought, well, this is what happens when you cut out all the interesting things about a character. They are still there to perform their service to the plot, mm-hmm. but I would say that this scene with her and Narek, she is the most like a person that she's ever been in the show. But boy, too little, too late.
Well, it's the last episode, so yeah. And we find out something about Narek. I think we find out that he says he's the black sheep of the family, and he's a washout, a reject of the Vought.
Josh Gad is what you're saying. He's an actor, yes. But no, he's Judd Vosh, the protectors of the spooky AI prophecy, and he didn't get in.
He didn't get in.
His application, he was waitlisted, I guess, maybe, but he didn't get in.
And I don't think we knew that before. I could be wrong.
I don't think we did. I think it was a mystery of what his status was, although we kind of assumed that he was a just regular Tal Shiar, and that seems to be the case.
Yes, and he is he's all ready to kill all the synths because they're bad and horrible. Wink, wink.
Mm-hmm.
And now, while this is all happening, Picard is kind of a compulsatory guest of the synths as they are...
I don't think compulsatory is a word, but...
Oh, no.
Compulsory, maybe?
Compulsory,
he's basically under house arrest here. He's in Bruce Maddox's apartment and playing with, like, robot butterflies and stuff, but otherwise he's just hanging out, taking naps, all that stuff.
And Soji goes to visit him, and he says, hey, don't let the Romulans turn you into the monsters that they think you are. And she is all like, you don't understand.
Found humans, a family.
It's not good for her. But the important thing of this, the whole reason this scene exists is so that Agnes can see Soji use the retinal scanner to get into the room.
Right. I would say also this is planting the seed, like Picard is reasoning with her because we know that in the end Soji is going to make the right decision and stand down from calling the, you know, robot tentacles to destroy all humans. And so he's planting the seed here. He's making his argument away from the crowd, the mob that they had last time. But you're right. It's also just so Agnes knows a way to free Picard later.
And I think that last week, Jason, correct me if I'm wrong, we posited that Soji was either pretending to be, I thought she was pretending to be part of this plan because she changed her mind so quickly.
Right.
But it becomes pretty clear in this episode that she is not pretending.
No, she's decided to just kind of like go all in on trusting the people from her home planet who, remember, she basically doesn't understand completely because she was only there for a short period of time, but she's decided they're her kind and her counterpart was very charismatic, and so she's going to go along with them, which I'm by splitting it over two episodes, it kind of eases the pain a little bit for me of if this had been one episode, I've been like, wait a second, because I'm not sure I believe that she would flip around so easily and kind of discard old JL like that. But they want us to believe that so that it can set up her change of heart later in this episode, clearly.
I buy it only because she's had a rather tumultuous couple of days, right? So she's kind of floating around between she thought she was a human, and now she finds out she's a synth, and there's a whole race of synths that she's a part of, and it's all very overwhelming, one imagines. So it's never happened to me, but I can imagine if it did, it would be a little overwhelming, and I would be looking for some sort of stability by, you know, wiping out all other life in the universe.
Yeah, I guess. I think we are meant in this scene also to see that she's not necessarily conflicted, but she kind of feels bad about Picard because she does think that Picard's heart is in the right place, but she's decided that this is an existential threat for her people. And I get that.
Right. And I mean, history does bear her theory, so it's not like it doesn't make any sense, but it does. I think you're right that if I had watched this right after the last episode, it would have been harder to swallow because she does change pretty dramatically in like a moment.
Yeah, for sure.
But synths think very quickly, so maybe there were many things that were happening there. But meanwhile, Rios and Rafi are figuring out how to use a magic tool.
Yeah, people, I was seeing people talk about, like, where the heck did this thing come from? But, like, the hippie android gave it to them last time and said, fix your ship with this. You just think good thoughts and it fixes things. And they're like, that's super weird, but okay. And I really liked that because I think that's a very strange and kind of Star Trek moment of we've got this technology that you don't even understand, but it will, and it doesn't work like your tools, but it'll do it. And so this is the thing, is they're kind of like, they're having their conversation, but they're also trying to figure out, like, how the heck does this thing work?
And they figure out you just visualize what you want, and the tool does it for you, which will come in handy later.
Yes.
But somehow Rios recognizes the sound of rocks being thrown at his ship, which I just think is funny.
Yeah.
I don't know why he recognizes that sound.
Those damn kids. They want in.
So who's throwing rocks?
It's Narek.
Narek. It's Narek.
It's Romulan Narek, who's got a bag full of grenades, but he just throwing rocks because he wants to team up, because what they're both actually after the same thing, which is to prevent them from calling in the AI monster squad and killing all the organics.
Yes, and they have a nice little chat. Narek is invited aboard. He has a chat with Rafi and Rios. Elnor joins them a little bit later and is not as enthusiastic about Narek's plan as perhaps other people.
No,
I did enjoy when Narek said, "I very much choose to live."
Yeah, I feel like I kind of called this. It's not quite what I expected, but it is that Narek is teaming up with our crew. Like I figured that would happen at the very least. Yes. And that's what happens here. But it's not so much that he's betraying his sister as much as he's decided that they're at this point they're on the same side because the androids are gonna kill everybody.
Right. He is once again showing that his plans have a little more nuance than perhaps his sister's, who his sister's plan is basically kill them all. And he is like, well, maybe we should team up with these other people and destroy the first threat, which is these interdimensional synths that are coming to kill everybody.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Then deal with the secondary threat, which is perhaps these synths here.
In this section, we also get a couple of scenes between Agnes and Brent Spiner as Alton Inigo Soong, AI, by the way. That's a reference, I think. The AI Soong, Dr. Soong. What a namer he was. But this is the second one of these scenes. She also tears an eye out of a dead android to use for the retinal
scanner.
Everybody
loves to pop out eyes.
Amazing. And she's like, oh, this is really gross. But she does it.
I really like the fact that they don't show us her popping it up, but there's a disgusting sound, so you can imagine what's happening.
Yeah. And I kept thinking, well, somebody's going to come back to this dead body, and they're going to be like, what the hell just happened?
But what happened to this other eye?
It just doesn't come up.
No. And she gets it to sneak in to talk to Picard. But I think that then we don't find, there's a bunch of stuff that happens before she talks to Picard.
Right, before she breaks in, right? There's the campfire talk about the, about what the Romulans are up to, and that where Narek is talking about his, you know, what they're trying to do and what they believe and the legend, and that maybe it is true, or at least it's based on this fact and they have to stop it, that whole thing.
Right. And he calls it history.
Yes.
Which is a callback to his wacky aunt who says legends are history, right? Doesn't she say something like that?
Yeah. Yeah.
So that was nice. And I thought that the more Romulan mythology, I enjoy that.
Mm-hmm. Actually, he says something that made me laugh out loud, because it's one of those things you put in. The Doctor Who writers like to do this too, who are longtime fans and are now writing the show, is they put things in that they know are just toss off lines that will drive fandom mad for years, if not decades. And so this line from Narek is that this happened before his people went to Vulcan. So he's just thrown in this whole other bit of mythology, which is, now we know that the Romulans left Vulcan to go to become, because of a schism, and they became the Romulans. But what he's saying now is the people who came to Vulcan, or the people on Vulcan, came there from somewhere else. They're not from that planet either. And I thought that was really funny. And it's not explained at all. And it's just there. And I love it, because it's just like, enjoy that, canon people. And future writers can pick up on that or never do, and they don't care. So I thought that was great.
Yes, it's science fiction at its best.
Yeah, I think so. As opposed to the scene that follows it immediately, which is cut to spaceships in warp and Commodore O, or whatever she is, on the bridge, and she's basically
Admiral O,
and she basically says, "Soon we will reach our destination." Blah ha 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 ha. And it's just it's there, I guess, to remind us that she's coming, but it is pointless. It's just
It is not pointless, because last episode of this podcast, I opined that I didn't think I liked the look of the new warbirds.
That close-up shot, it's pretty sweet, isn't it?
It is pretty sweet. They didn't really give us a good look of it. And this scene, just because I can see the warbird, is worth it, because it's pretty cool looking. So
I agree, but then there's nothing. She's just like,
well, there's nothing there. She's just like, ha, we're almost there.
We're almost there. That's right. Yeah, I'm going to turn around this ship if you kids stop complaining. All right, cut to the next scene. Yeah, so that was dumb, but it's okay. Narek's got like a big pile of grenades.
He's got a plan.
And they're gonna like fake it, him as being a prisoner. And they're gonna make a soccer ball full of grenades. It seemed extraneous at the time that Rios liked soccer, but now it's a great place to put the explosive whatever it is. And they're gonna blow up the transmitter that's gonna reach create the robot apocalypse.
Yes, that's their plan, and they're just going to walk in the front door and deliver Narek to the synths as a kind of a peace offering. Although, yeah, I guess the synths aren't angry at the other humans, other than they're angry at everybody,
right?
But
because he was framed for the murder of the other synth, he's, you know, they've built him up to be a monster, so it actually is effective to use him as a prop here.
Yes. And this is what now Agnes uses the eye and gets into Picard's room, and they have a nice talk. Agnes,
love this scene.
Says that she thought she was the worst secret agent ever, but she's getting the hang of it.
Yeah, she may be actually pretty good at it. Yeah. Yeah,
she's true. So she's tricking everybody.
Yep. Yep.
Because that's when Soong, before that scene, Soong is like, oh, you know, you're sacrificing yourself. It's great. Because you're their mother, I guess. And she says, no. When he leaves, she says, I'm not his mother.
Yeah.
Or not his mother, not their mother, the synths. She's also not
Because that's the thing in the last episode is like, would you protect your children? And she says, would you die to protect your children? She says, yes, but like, you're not my children, is basically what she's saying here, which is great. And this is actually the turn that I mean, I kind of assumed, but I was expecting from Soji, and we actually get it from Agnes here, where she's like, yeah, that was BS. I'm playing along, but I'm going to get you out of here. This is ridiculous. And I like that. And then meanwhile, like out in the lab, like a couple doors down, Sung discovers that his golden girl is a stabbing murderer with her little hummingbird dagger or whatever. And that she's framed Narek for it, or Narek's like an accomplice, but she's behind it. And that's important because he now knows that she's messed up and that the androids are not to be trusted. Like, it's a quick turn of evaluation of their prospects by Sung, but at least he gets there, where it's like, oh, she lied to me and killed one of her own and framed another guy. That's not great. And so, you know, he's sort of figuring it out.
That's true. Perhaps I should not trust these synths of mine. And as we find out now, there's a ticking time bomb here.
Yes.
The Romulan fleet is 7 minutes away.
Right. And the transmitter is being built. So, you know, which is going to be there first? They're going to blow them up, or is there going to be a transmitter and all of that? And at this point, Picard and Agnes have now fled, and they're back at La Serena, but nobody else is there because they're all on their mission. They like cross paths or whatever. They're in doing their thing while Picard and Agnes are leaving. And Picard says, well, this is what we got to do. We basically got to fly up there in front of those 200 Romulan ships and say stop, because otherwise nobody else is going to do anything.
Right. And Agnes is like, well, what about the synths and their transmitter? And I like Picard's reaction. It's like, well, we have to stop them too, but what can we do?
Yep.
It was good. And so this is, Picard has to remember how to fly a starship.
Yes.
In a fun scene. And then Agnes says, make it so, which I thought was amusing.
And the ship doesn't really fly quite right, which is a nice touch that it's kind of wobbly the whole time.
It is. And then off they go into space to try to stop this Romulan fleet. And in the hopes that the Federation fleet, Starfleet fleet, will appear as well, perhaps. But they don't know if the message has got out, because last episode, Picard was sending several messages to Starfleet asking for help, but it seemed to be blocked.
Yeah, you got so no response. They're coming. Just a dial tone.
That's right.
Doesn't know what's going on. Beep, 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 beep. Your space call cannot be completed as dialed. Something like that. So he's hoping it got through. But in the meantime, he's going to figure out how to use the touch controls on this ship. I'm used to a computer with buttons. Now I have to use a touchscreen hologram. And meanwhile, back at the ranch, Sung deactivates he deactivates the killer android that now that he's seen that she kills, he basically just turns her off and says, this is bad. We need to not do this. But Soji is kind of committed, and she like catches the soccer ball explosive and just chucks it away.
It was unclear to me how she did that, but I guess they have powers, so she just did it because she's a synth.
I don't know. I don't quite know whether she was catching it or I didn't understand that part. That like, what were they throwing it at her? Because she just caught it and threw it away, as opposed to like throwing it at the transmitter. I don't understand.
And there was a scene where Rios was like, move and looking at Soji. So I guess they had to. And at the end,
maybe
so,
they're trying to blow up the control panel or something.
I think they're trying to blow up the, because that's when she, spoilers for this episode, though you're listening to this, Soji eventually does destroy the console that she's standing at to stop the transmitter. Yeah. So I guess that's maybe the critical part.
I guess that's it, is that they're trying to blow up the transmitter. You're right. I think that's it. So. But she's right there. So she just catches it and throws it away. And that's like, that was,
because she's dedicated to
all that for nothing.
I thought it was going to work. I was surprised that it was so quickly fulfilled.
All right, Scott, that brings us to one of my favorite scenes in this whole season.
Mm-hmm.
Because Seven of Nine runs up on Nerissa and says, you suck. And they fight and they fight and they fight and they fight and they fight.
They do.
Across two scenes. And eventually, she basically kicks her down the shaft. And that's the end of Nerissa. Unless beams away, but to go bwahaha another day. But I don't think so. I think that's the end of her.
I feel like Nerissa is not that interesting, that they're not going to bring her back
in the sixth season
as like a baddie, because
she's
enough
not,
with Nerissa.
She's not interesting at all. But it is, you know, from a character standpoint, it's Seven avenging Hugh, and then also questioning herself later with Rios and saying, I said I wasn't going to do that sort of thing, and lash out and kill people just because they deserved it. And, And he's like, yeah, well, I also feel bad because Captain Picard died. And she's like, I win. Mine is way worse. You just watched. I did it. And that made me laugh, too. It's like, I win. Mine was worse. I am a worse person than you. Take that.
In your face, Rios.
Yeah. But that happens later. First, O and the fleet arrive. And,
oh, man. And my favorite moment in this episode, Jason, is when Admiral O says, start the sterilization planet pattern 5, which
yes.
indicates to me that there are at least four other ones
to sterilize a planet. I had that too. And that harkens back. That's a very Star Trek thing, because I always feel like, you know, evasive pattern delta or, you know, anything that's numbered in Star Trek, you're like, how many of these do you really have that you have? This is pattern 58. Like, there are at least 58 patterns, and this is like, yes, just this is like genocide plan number 5.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not like Mambo number 5, like a little bit of genocide. I don't know. Anyway, that's my joke. That's my Mambo number 5 joke. Genocide number 5 from the Romulans. Yeah,
ripped from the headlines. Jesus.
Yes, it's a timely joke. Well, I was the other thing would be Chanel number 5. It's like the
That's timeless.
It's murder number 5.
And then, so Picard has to figure out, how are we going to stop all of the, you know, the sterilization pattern number 5?
Flower power. Flower power, Scott. Flower power.
Flower power. That's all you need. I did like the fact that O is like, what is this
what?
Ship?
Yeah.
And Romulan is like, oh, I'm scanning it. And she's like, don't bother scanning it. Let's just blow up
just
the planet.
Blow it up. Yeah. I love the shots of the flowers coming up from the surface.
Oh, yes. Very pretty.
I think that I think that's really cool. And it makes a big mess, which is fun.
And very, once again, those flowers, very Star Trek-y.
Very Star Trek-y. I like how strange it is. And Picard and Agnes, their ship, they're just like bobbing around trying to not get killed while the carnage is happening. And I like that about it. I do think if at the culmination of hundreds of years, if not of thousands of years, of protecting the galaxy and all organic life from monsters, you reach the planet that you've been trying to search for years, and it's right there in your sights, they seem to not have a lot of urgency about destroying it. Like that's you're true. There. It's time to blow it up. And they're like, well, begin the plan, warm up the things.
You know,
Planetary
sterilization pattern number 5 takes a while to set up, but it's very satisfying.
It's worth it. Yeah. Yeah. I think that may be.
And there are 218 of those ships, and
yeah,
there are
just kind
like
of overkill,
25
right?
flowers. So one assumes space is big, Jason. I don't know if you know this. They could totally just fly around those flowers, some of their ships, and blow up the village.
Right?
It's only a tiny village, too.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, it's the only settlement on the whole planet.
But that being said, it is a very cool scene of seeing the Romulan ships attacking these giant flowers and the little ship with Picard and Agnes flitting about and the fun scene where Agnes figures out, oh, you know, maybe they'll name this maneuver after you. Wait, there already is a maneuver named after you, the Picard maneuver, which, of course, is... a little treat to super Star Trek nerds.
Right, but it becomes actually a plot point, because she's like, well, wait a second, we could actually do that with the weird repair thing and make more of us. Like, it's a very weird, like, did we know it could do that? Well, we really didn't know anything about it. But I'm willing to accept it, because I think it's a fun idea, because it shows that she's smart, and she's like, oh, we've got this weird device. I bet it could help us do this. And so the idea there is that they're going to make a bunch of illusion copies of themselves in order to confuse the Romulans.
With warp signatures.
Yeah, as if they're the fleet that's warping in.
Yes, and I thought that was good. And there's a nice scene. So Picard calls up Soji, and he's like, BTW, I want to give you and your people something. And Soji says, oh, that you didn't have to. I didn't bring anything for you. What are you going to give us? And he says, my life, and then hangs up. And so Soji's like, no, Picard, don't do that. Because he's going to self-sacrifice himself to save them, to prove that humans aren't all that bad. Just mostly.
Yeah.
And so there's, you know, lots of Picard ships. Oh no, Captain Picard's ship, who is now Admiral Picard, gets hit. And perhaps bad things are going to happen. But just in the nick of time, the Starfleet fleet arrives. And this I did not see coming, although I probably should have, led by none other than Captain Riker.
I knew that was going to happen. I figured, oh, we're going to see Riker again. And then Jonathan Frakes was in the opening credits, and I thought, really?
Oh, I didn't notice that.
Yeah, that's a good pays to skip the opening credits. I'm sure people are going to frame by frame it. The thing that struck me about the Star, and I know there's only so much you can do, but about the Starfleet arrival is that
they're all the same ship.
It seems like they're all the same ship.
Mm-hmm.
So they couldn't afford. And that's always a great Easter egg, is if you could show a bunch of different kind of Starfleet ships just to mix it up a little bit, have three or four different kinds. They don't have this now. Now, maybe they were coming in from the starbase where they make these ships or something like that. Or I don't know. I can come up with some headcanon for it. But I was a little disappointed that there wasn't a little more diversity in the spaceship design, because that's a very Star Trek thing to have a bunch of different kinds of Star Trek ships.
I was disappointed in that, because I was going to pause it to look at all the different ships and see if I could find some ships that I recognized, but then I realized quickly they're all the same ship. Although Riker does say, you know, I'm on board the fastest and toughest ship that Starfleet has, and I have a whole fleet of them. So they kind of just say, oh, all right, well, they're all the same
thing. Hot off the presses. These are our best ships. We made them last year. They're awesome.
So get out of here. This planet is now under the protection of the Federation.
Yeah.
And Admiral O, and I do like when he's like, Commodore O, Admiral O, whatever you're calling yourself.
Yeah. And she's like, but I claimed this land. And they're like, yeah, Picard like called several days ago. First. So too late. Yeah. We're going to.
No take backs.
And in a moment that I think is actually pretty good and set up well, it's the, well, no, we're here to stop this. And if we have to get in a fight with you and lose all our ships in order to stop this, we're going to do it, because we're here to stop the destroyer from destroying everything. You got to do that. You don't turn away and say, well, okay, let her destroy everything. So that leads to the critical moment in this whole season, which is the only way this is going to stop is if Picard can convince Soji to not fulfill her destiny as the destroyer, and to turn off the signal, and to accept and trust Picard and trust the Federation, something that from the very beginning of the season, you know, it's been, can we even trust the Federation? Can we trust Picard? Can Picard really affect change? And in this moment, which has been set up since they met in like three or four episodes ago, it's that, like, do you have a connection with this man? Do you trust him? Do you believe him? Because he's telling you, please do not destroy all organic life. We are going to protect you. And she has to make the decision. And that is absolutely what this whole story is about, is that moment.
Mm-hmm. And it's very well acted. And Picard says, I believe in you. You have to make this choice. It is up to you, Soji. We trust you to make the right choice.
Don't be the destroyer. They want you to be the destroyer. Mm-hmm. They believe that you're the destroyer. Are you the destroyer? And there are like metal tentacle things coming through the portal that it's generating, that it's like all menacing, and like tentacles are going to come out and rip all the people apart.
Tentacles, metal tentacles are never good.
It's Dr. Octopus on the other side.
That's it is the Dr. Octopus rule. Metal tentacles are never a good idea. Soji destroys the beacon, seeing Picard's side. And we should mention that while all this is happening, Picard has had another one of his episodes, and Agnes has to shoot him full of some drugs to keep him up.
Yeah, and he says this is basically going to kill me. This is going to hasten the end, but it's going to get me awake enough to do this thing that I need to do, which is sacrifice myself, which he said earlier, like, mm-hmm. I need to sacrifice myself. This is my final move, is I need to sacrifice myself for this thing I believe in, for the person that I believe in, which is Soji, and this whole issue about the synths and Data, and all of it is like, I need to be the one who stands up and sacrifices myself. And Agnes is like, all right, I'm going to shoot you with the stuff now. And he's like, okay, well, my headache isn't quite so bad yet. He does this great heroic thing. And then of course, he basically collapses, because after Riker like tells off O and all the Romulans leave.
All the Romulans leave. And then Riker and Picard Picard's like, thanks for, you know, stopping by. And Riker says, well, I'm not going to let you, I wasn't going to let you have all the fun while I sat in the woods making pizza.
Making pizza, right? But I got your back. And and so you know, he's like, well, I'll see you later. And Picard's like, yep, uh-huh. And then he breaks contact and they leave. And Picard's like, adieu. Like, because he's, I'm going to die. Actually, I'm going to die now, but I'm not going to tell you that.
Yeah, and I did think it was a little strange, and maybe you disagree, but every single one of the Federation ships leaves. You'd think maybe one or two would stick around.
Yeah,
but
so
they all go.
Yes, I think this is one of the frustrations I got with this episode. And I really liked this episode, actually. I think it really, I think it after part one being kind of like, what is going on? I think it really, they brought it all together and they brought their themes for the season together. But the fact that the Romulans just leave and that the Federation apparently let them go, although they said that they were going to escort them, but then they don't leave. But maybe that's where they were going there. But I really expected at the very least that there would be some complexity to the issue. That's like, we're going to leave a ship behind, or there's a ship on the way, or something like that, just to protect this in case there are other Romulans coming around. And instead they all leave. It's like it makes it feel more like a plot device, which is what it is, which is Fleet A is coming. Oh no. Mm-hmm. Oh, here's Fleet B. They cancel each other out. Continue. And I wanted it to be, there's a scene a little bit later where they're like, the synth band got reversed. Yay. And I'm like, really? Like, again, I wanted it to be a little more complex. I wanted them to say, well, it's not official yet, but we've already heard from the Federation Council that they're going to drop it. The new evidence is clear, but there's nothing about that. They're just like, hey, it's over. It's great. And
let's go.
I get it from a, we've got too much story to tell here and it's just going to get in the way perspective. I sort of get it. But the problem I have with it is it makes it all too clean, too simple. The cuts are too precise and like, I feel like reality has got to be messier than that. So I want it to be like, we're going through channels, but it's going to be okay. And they're leaving a ship behind, but they're just going to stay in orbit and protect us. Like, I just wanted it a little bit more like this story continues, like the ramifications of the story continue. And the show sort of wants to have it be like, nope, we solved it. It's done.
This is all fine. Well, the show doesn't want you to think about that because of what happens next.
Yeah, it's true. Because Picard, you know, Picard...
He dies.
Yeah, he's dying, and they beam him down so that they could look at him, and that's like, no, he's going to die, and he dies.
They do just beam him down so they can look at him, because that's all they do is look at him.
Yeah, because they can't save him, so they beam him down so they can all say goodbye, and then he dies, cut to black. That's it. Picard's dead, and it turns out there won't be another season of Picard. I actually, in that break, I was thinking, so is next season like Star Trek Data, or Star Trek Riker, or something like that?
I for a moment I thought, oh my goodness, is this a bold choice that they're just going to stop here and the next season is going to be around some other character? Yeah,
or have they been, I did what I really thought was, has all this talk about season two just been a lie? Just been a prank to shock that this is only a one season show? No.
He's fine. But when he's dying, he sees a vision of that same dream of Data painting the painting, and I don't want the game to end.
Yeah,
I like that. And then he dies, and there are a couple of scenes before we see what happens after he dies,
right. That,
which is
that Seven and Rio dealing scene that we talked about. You win, which was great. And then Rafi is destroyed and super sad, and
that's so sad. And yeah, Elnor and Rafi crying. And I must admit, Jason, I don't know about you, because you have a heart of stone.
That's true.
But when Picard died, I did tear up a bit, because it's very sad.
You know, I was not quite sure what to think about that, because I was like, what are they? Are they pulling a trick on us here? Which they were, by the way, for the record, they were.
They were, yes. Totally.
And also, it was like midnight, and I don't know. Like, there's a lot going on. So, but later, it got to me that this. So there's a 6-minute long scene between Picard and Data in where Picard is dead and Data is dead, right? So what is happening here?
Dead.
Where they have a whole conversation. He says, this is a quantum
this
simulation.
Scene is so good.
And you just died, and this is a quantum simulation. And they, by the fireside, they have a conversation.
It is so nice. And I like the first thing that Data asks him is, are you wearing the clothes you had on when you died? Which is such a Data question, and also works well because then it makes you realize, oh, right, Data was wearing this Nemesis uniform when he died. Give it some context.
Yeah, he's got the Nemesis uniform. And they're in a house that's very much like the Picard Chateau, except they're like going through space at warp. Out all the windows and on the ceiling and everything, which is, you know, it's a surreal landscape.
And it's monochromatic, right? And muted, except for the fire. Yeah, it's really good. This scene is worth the price of admission. That's what I say.
I think this scene is worth the whole season, and that's good because I think this scene is why this story exists. I think ultimately the elevator pitch for this season is not what Michael Chabon said in his interview with Variety, which is that Picard solves the mystery of who stole the bell in the French town where he lives, and that's all
I
it is.
Watch that.
It's the well, yes. You and I joked about that early on, like that's murder she wrote with Picard, and that's basically what Michael Chabon he said. I don't think the world is ready for that show, but you and I are ready for that show.
We are. But Michael Chabon, if you're listening, make that show.
You make that show. But what it is this is about Picard living up to Data's sacrifice and making Data's sacrifice worth it, which means doing something with his life and not just retreating. And it turns out that he's basically protecting Data's legacy and his children and the future of beings that are like him. And also, I think kind of brilliantly, about dealing with Data's death in a way that Star Trek Nemesis couldn't do, which meant that Data's story got truncated. You know, the story that we've been following from the very beginning about Data's progress, and it just gets cut off, and there are no more movies, and it's over. And so this whole thing is about Data having closure and Picard living up to Data's sacrifice and taking that stuff from Nemesis, which is not a good movie, and actually making it meaningful and fixing it. And this scene is the culmination of that, which is Picard and Data having the conversation about the sacrifices that he made and ultimately about Data wanting to be human. And it leads to that beautiful moment where he says, what is more human than dying? And I need to do that. And I've been hanging out in my simulation. There's some good canon stuff thrown in there where he's like, because we were all wondering about like one neuron, how does that really work? He's like, well, also the memory matrix from B4.
Right.
Like B4. That's like I did download my memory into B4, and even though it didn't work in B4, they had my downloaded memory, so they put me in this place, and I've been living in like a virtual reality here, which is fine, I guess, but I am at the end of my life, and the right thing for me to do to finally understand being human, the culmination of my journey to understanding humanity, is to die.
Yes.
Yeah.
He says the butterfly that lives forever is really not a butterfly.
Not a butterfly. That's right. That's right.
That's pretty heavy stuff.
The door opens and then they have this conversation with the white light behind, which is like this implication that Picard is going to pass on. But what Data is saying is, no, you're going to go back.
Yes, and I love the moment when Picard, Data says, oh, I want you to do something before you leave, and Picard gets up and looks at the door, and he says, do I have to go?
Yeah.
And I thought that's so wonderful.
And this whole thing wraps back around to the first scene, right? Because it's this and the little coda when they pull the plug on the computer that is running Data. It is that I don't want the game to end. Scene from the very beginning, like I don't want to lose this moment with my friend, but the game has to end.
Right, the game can't last forever.
Yeah,
nothing can last forever. And so yeah, then that's when Data says, "I'd like you to terminate my consciousness."
Yeah,
and Picard agrees because he realizes what Data is asking him to do, and you know, who else would you entrust with such a mission?
That's
other
right.
Than your best friend.
It's the final thank you he gives to Data for saving his life, is to do what Data's last request is. And that has resonance, right? I mean, in end of life stuff where you have to take care of a, you know, you and I have both gone through that with a dying parent, where it's this idea of like the responsibility that you have to take in that moment. And that's kind of like a final act of love in some ways, to be the person who's there at the end, or is providing support. And that's all kind of resonant in this, that this is Picard's responsibility to Data in this moment, is to do this thing, even though it's very sad. It's his wish that this happen. Right.
And even though your compulsion or your first thought is, no, I don't want to do that. I want you to live forever. You could live forever in this simulation. Why wouldn't you want to do that?
Yeah. I did have a moment where I thought, you know, Picard could say, you know, they have this golem. Why don't you go in the golem and I'll die and then we'll be done. And you know, they didn't go down that route. And I think that's fine, because I think Data's response would be no, that's not how this is going to work. You're going to go. This whole Data will say, but Captain, haven't you been watching the show? This whole 10 episodes is about you re-engaging with the world and trying to make it a better place like you used to after your 20 years on the sidelines. So you're back now. This is your moment. So that's why I want you in the game, because that's exactly what, well, maybe not in those words, but that's what Data would have said. And so then he wakes up.
He wakes up and the first thing he asks is, am I real?
Yes. Good callback. And so G says, of course you are. And then the first thing he does is drink some tea to make sure that they haven't screwed everything up and he can't drink tea. And they have that conversation about how he doesn't have any superpowers and he's the age that he was. And basically, yes, Patrick Stewart can continue to play Jean-Luc Picard. We didn't get like the guy who plays Narek to play you from now on or anything like that.
I did momentarily think, what if they just get a much younger actor and play Picard,
the immortal adventures of Jean-Luc Picard.
That's right. And then he says, you didn't make me immortal, did you? And I love Brent Spiner's acting here. He's like, oh, relax, man.
Relax, man. We all know what the deal
is. Paying attention.
Like, yeah. It's like, although he does, then he says, well, you know, I'd take 10 or 20 more years, maybe. It's like, all right. I want season 3 of Star Trek Picard to be like, cut to 1,000 years later, Picard is still alive.
And oh man, this is so I cried a bit when Picard died, and I once again cried a bit when the simulation, they gather around the simulation computer and pull out the crystals and quote some Shakespeare.
This is what got me. This is the stuff that really got me, because this is a beautiful moment. It is the culmination of Data's story in a way that Nemesis never could be. And the way the tribute they play to those moments in Nemesis, that they're trying to extend those thoughts. The blue skies comes back here. Mm-hmm. And this is the, you know, that was the thing Data sang in Nemesis at the wedding, and then at the end it B4 sings it, and it's that moment of like possibility, and here it's reprised again as the sort of the very end of Data's story. This is great stuff, and this really got to me, and it's so appropriate. And it's Picard there at the end in his Starfleet
captain's uniform,
yeah,
holding Data's hand as Data kind of
dissolves,
evaporates into quantum simulation smoke.
Yeah, quantum foam.
Yeah, and I say that.
And we'll never see Brent Spiner again. Cut to, Brent Spiner. He's also in the other scene. And actually, I had a thought, and I haven't watched The Ready Room. I don't know if Brent Spiner is on that or if it's just Patrick Stewart. But my thought, too, is, God, Brent Spiner has to play another character reacting to the death of Data. Like, he's in the scene where Data dies. I just had that moment like, well, that must have been a very weird thing for Brent Spiner, because he's playing a different character reacting to the death of his
main
big character. Yeah, that's wild stuff.
It is weird and very touching. So very well done. And then everybody's happy.
Yeah, little last montage.
A little later, of Agnes and Rios kiss. Raffi and Seven of Nine are holding hands.
Yeah, so this is Michael Chabon did an interview this week where somebody asked about, like, are there no, like, sort of explicitly gay characters in this story? And he's like, well, you know, I just wanted to show it in moments. I didn't want to have somebody, like, walk in and say, oh, by the way, that's my girlfriend or whatever. But he said, Seven and Bejazel, and we picked up on that. That's very clear. He says, Rafi and the officer that she calls to get the diplomatic credentials for Picard, they're like, they were totally a couple. That's an ex calling calling another ex and really regretting it. And then here we get Rafi and Seven interlocking their fingers in a way that's like, ooh, this is really interesting. What's going on there? And then there's just Picard and Elnor, because those guys are... there. And then, and Soji, who so this is one of those moments where they're trying to really do something simple. So he's like, so you know, Picard, it's artfully done, but Picard's like, after all of this, you're not going to stay? And she's like, yeah, I'm a traveler. Like I didn't want to come home. And this, it really, it's like, it's not really my home. That was where I implanted memories of, you know, Seattle. And then this place was like, they turned me on here and sent me off. And like, nah, I don't. Also, they're creepy and weird hippie
they
androids.
Are. It's a weird place.
And Soong is a weirdo, and I don't, he's an acquired taste. Soong's are acquired taste. Great line from Data. But it's like this moment of like, oh, well, here's our crew then, I guess. This is our new Picard crew.
Yeah. And she says, since they lifted the ban on synthetics, I can go wherever I want.
Yeah, and that's the line where I'm like, come on. It should be, you know, again, I just wanted it to be a little like that.
I know, it took us so long to get to this point. Maybe it should be more than a throwaway line that, you know, that huge ban.
I was thinking Picard wakes up and they're like, you know, okay, well, I know it seems like that just happened, but you've actually been dead for 4 months and we just finally finished getting this together. And a lot has happened in that time. The synth ban, there's some Starfleet guys down there. But again, there's no complexity to it. It's literally just, oh, it's all fine now. Okay.
Everything's good.
And I get it. I get the simplification of it. But like I said earlier, when I complained about it, it's a little too, I wanted a little texture. I wanted a little, you know, this is a complex universe. And like you said, we spent so much time on this to undo it with one line of dialogue and be like, oh, I guess it's fine now. I just don't like it. I would rather it have been more detailed, a little bit more complex than that, since this is the payoff.
Right. I agree with you, but I do think that there is a lot of complexity in this episode, mostly around Picard and Data and their stories, right? And so I forgive it, these other kind of plot short changings, because I imagine they only had so much time and budget, so they had to figure out, well, this stuff, do we really want a couple of minutes spent on the synth band when we could have a few more minutes with Data and Picard in the quantum simulation? That's the right choice.
I agree. It just gets a little frustrating. And I think as I mentioned about our Romulan friend, Narissa, it's just, this is one of the places that shows the seams of the limitations of the season or learning about it. And it is the first season of a show. Michael Chabon talked about, like, he learned a lot and there are a lot of things that he might do different, but, you know, he had never really run a show before.
And it was his first time.
And he said, you know, look back at first seasons of other Star Trek shows. It's hard. It's like, I get it. Okay. I get it. But, there was just, we'll save some of this maybe for our two discussions that are going to happen about the season as a whole. But it's one of those things that I totally, in the moment of this episode, I understand the expediency of not dealing with this stuff. But when you look at the shape of the season and how much was put on the synth ban at the beginning, especially, it feels like from a season-long perspective, I wanted a little more payoff than, oh, well, it's reverse now. Everything's fine. We learned that they're good and it's fine. Because that one synth killed another synth, everything's fine, which doesn't really track. But, you know, I'm assuming that in the background, obviously, they just revealed that this is all a conspiracy and O was behind it and it was a setup and the synths didn't revolt and they were programmed to do it. And like, we can all assume that that's the case. I don't know. I just wanted a little more than, oh, it's fine now. As you know, Bob, it's fine now.
I agree. But I will say that I still think this is a really good episode and a very strong ending.
They nailed it. They stuck the landing in a way that last week I was concerned they weren't going to. But this episode really, I think, did a very good job of paying off the plot in an interesting way and also the emotional stakes.
Yes.
Except, I will say this, except for Narek, who is never dealt with.
I don't know. He's just there now, I guess. What is he?
Is he living with the synths? Is he on? Is he down in the like the Hollow Suite on La Serena? What? Where?
I don't know where he went.
Where is Narek? Right, because he showed
hashtag where is Narek?
Yeah, I mean his Romulan friends left, but he was still there. I mean, maybe I missed something, but it seems like that was just a thread that was dropped, and it's kind of funny because he was an actually kind of interesting character who did some interesting things at the end. So that's still out there, but that's okay. It in general, it did what it needed to do, and it resolved not just the plot, but the emotional stakes and the emotional narrative that was what the show was all about from scene one of episode one.
And maybe Narek will return in Star Trek Picard season two.
I suspect he will.
I think so as well. Because why wouldn't he?
Why? I
agree with you. Very strong ending. I had some worries in the last couple of episodes of Star Trek Picard that perhaps, as we spoke about on this very podcast, they would not stick the landing. But yeah. I think they did, much like you. So,
I think so. I think it's the effect of, like, we started getting worried because we were seeing them kind of manipulate the story and the characters to get the ending they wanted. But it was a good ending. Like, that part, so I can complain a little bit about some of the setup feeling a little bit weird. But they did have a good ending, and I liked the ending. And I enjoyed the ride. And yes, I think, looking back on it, as Michael Chabon said, if you look back on it and you were a novelist like he is, and you had the chance to do another draft, I think the emphasis would be a little bit different and the pacing would be a little bit different, because it did seem sort of like slow and then fast and then slow and then fast. And you could smooth some of that stuff out, but it's TV and that's not how it works. And overall, I enjoyed this season. So yeah.
Yeah, I want to see more, which is, I think, a sign of success with any television show. If I watch the finale and then I'm sad because I can't immediately or in a week watch yet another episode.
For the life of me, I don't know what they're going to do next. I think that's one of the fun things about this, is that I kind of assumed their ending would roll into a second season setup.
Oh, yeah. There's no setup.
Like, you get to this and it's like, well, we resolved this, but there's this whole other thing that came out of it. And that is not what we got. It's
engage and off they go.
Off they go. And is it going to be the adventures? Because, like, the universe is complex. Like, what is Picard's purpose? And does Rios, you know... Does Picard owe Rios a lot of money now? And Agnes did kill a guy, and they've got
there
this,
is that.
Like there are lots of threads to work out here, and it's unclear, which on one level is really kind of exhilarating. On another level, it's kind of like, well, I don't really know what it's going to be about. Is it going to be about the Borg? That was a thread that came up, but it seemed like a complimentary story thread here. So is that more of what it's about? Or are we going to dive a little more into Romulan stuff? Or are we going to take like a totally different take on another part of Next Generation era lore and kind of, you know, peel it apart, like Klingon stuff or Cardassian stuff or whatever? Or yes, or is Picard going to solve the mystery of the missing bell and then go to Risa for a vacation, and there's like a, you know, he has to solve a murder there, right, and it's just Starfleet mysteries with Jean-Luc Picard. maybe
I don't know. I think that the first season of Picard seemed to exist solely because Patrick Stewart wanted to do something different and explore this relationship between Data and Picard.
Yeah.
And I think season two exists, one assumes, because Patrick Stewart had a lot of fun doing Star Trek Picard.
I think that's it. And that's great, right? Like, I mean, we all assumed this was going to be a miniseries. And then at some point they said, we think it'll be three seasons. It's like, what? Okay, right? So great. Bring it on. Once it's safe to take your actor who's in his 80s and
stay inside,
make TV again, then hopefully they'll have some scripts ready and they can make that happen. By the way, did you notice... I don't know if the version you saw had this, but they had a little Star Trek Discovery teaser pre-roll thing at the beginning of the show.
I did notice that.
Just a little thing saying it's coming. As far as we know, Discovery and Lower Decks are both available to come in the next few months. Lower Decks is animated. It's unclear with the virus stuff what exactly is going to be ready when and how they're going to roll this stuff out. My understanding is that Star Trek Discovery, they shot everything, and one of their editors tweeted a picture of his trash can Power Mac on a table with two monitors and some speakers and stuff in his house, and he's editing Star Trek Discovery at a folding table, like a card table, at his house.
Oh,
so they're in post-production.
This is the world we live in.
And so that's going to change how it goes. But it's also amazing that a TV show can be done in post-production by computers at people's houses. And so I'm sure that that'll happen. So we will, they say coming soon, and they could have taken that off if they didn't believe it. So I think, you know, we'll be back beyond next week's season wrap up. We'll be back probably sooner than we might expect, because there are two other Star Trek shows in the hopper that have, you know, essentially completed their primary production and are just in post-production.
And we are committed to talking about new Star Trek.
We are.
In all its forms.
Right here.
So we will be back. You can't get rid of us people. In fact, we'll be back next week, because I'll be talking to a whole bunch of different people.
And then you'll be rid of us for a little while, but probably not as long as you hope.
Exactly, because we'll be back on your podcast device of choice.
But thank you to New Mexico Tea Company for sponsoring this season. That was really great of them. NMTCO.com or TEarlGrayHot.com. You can't forget it. And there's the code. TEarlGrayHot gives you the free shipping and the discount on the tea and all of that good stuff. So thank you to them for doing this. And Scott, thank you to you. This has been a really fun journey visiting with our old buddy Jean-Luc.
It certainly has been. And thank you, Jason, for coming on this journey with me. And thank you to the people who are listening.
I got tired of sitting around in my vineyard, Scott, so I'm glad I'm back out there.
Wait a second. Who does that? If you're Picard, who am I then?
The dog.